Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here, just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello friends, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Welcome to part one of our two-part Alpha Papa live special, recorded in front of an audience at London's Prince Charles Cinema earlier this year. Obviously, this is part one. Part two will follow tomorrow if you're listening live, or if you're listening after Christmas Day, then both parts will already be up and ready for you to listen to. There are a couple of elements of this podcast that were visual for our live audience only, but thankfully not too many. If you'd like to get in touch, then you can email us, thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, or @thepartridgepod on Twitter. On with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Prince Charles Cinema and Monkey Tennis Live, the first ever live recording of the podcast described by The Telegraph as one of the best TV and film podcasts, and by various iTunes reviewers as pointless, unfunny, rubbish, impossibly boring, vain, wacky, meh, and ruining Alan Partridge forever. Embarrassingly bad, a bunch of Oxbridge rejects cackling at their own jokes, and, in the words of one reviewer, the only saving grace is there can only be 12 episodes, so soon it will go away as they run out of things to talk about. So, thanks for joining us for episode 14 of Monkey Tennis, recorded in front of a live audience of Alan enthusiasts, maniacs, and members of the homeless community with stolen cinema membership cards. Please make a moderate amount of noise if you're ready to celebrate the life and times of Mr. Alan Gordon Partridge. We've left a short gap in the recording of this intro to allow for applause. If there was no applause, please imagine there was some applause. Our presentation begins with a short film.
So we're finally doing the special on Alpha Papa. So this is the one that starts off with the North Norwich logo.
No. The opening shot is Alan's face.
No, stop getting Alan wrong. I'll tell you about Alpha Papa, or do the swoosh sound with your mouths. We see the North Norfolk Digital logo. I'm a Gregorian chanter. Ah, singing dribbles out. We're in Norfolk. DJ scroll across the screen, then Pat Farrell starts wobbling, and one man who used to be on military-based quiz show Skirmish goes, well, that music was very foreboding. And then he speaks down the microphone thing and speaks into it and goes, I've just been talking to Norfolk's most suntanned child. And then there's a man in there, and he's Tim Key, he does poems, you know, and he's on the side going, ooh, sidekick stuff. Then the cameraman says, I need to cover the takeover of the radio station, see ya. And then it cuts to Pat, Colm Meaney, and yes, he's with the boss. Yeah, he's threatened by him. And they say, are you on your way out? And he says, oh, you tell me.
Hey, he means his job.
Anyway, then Alan puts on his radio voice and he starts presenting. And he's being irked by this sidekick shit in a segment with insensitive racial undertones. And Simon's prattling along and Alan just starts motioning to him, going, right, I've had enough of this, just stop it. And then he turns it around with a quip and he does a serious lecture, but they land on their feet. I'm not sure how, but they're not showing off because they've just made an on-air gaffe. And you think, oh, God, Alan Partridge is going to be sacked.
So?
Please put your hands together and welcome the hosts of Monkey Tennis.
Monkey Tennis?
Just like that.
Monkey Tennis?
People around the world ask, who is Alan Partridge?
Monkey Tennis?
I am some choice.
Chronic thuggery.
Monkey Tennis?
Jason Argonaut.
Monkey Tennis?
Our friend Michael's just sent a text saying he hasn't bought toilet paper in 18 months.
How does he?
He steals it from the pub. It's a relief.
Monkey Tennis?
Oh, we should have made that about 15 seconds shorter, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Hello!
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 Hi. Hello, everyone that's here.
I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
It looks like a photograph of an explosion.
Nick Older.
One is her, the other is H, the other is H.
And Tom Stab.
He wasn't stealing crisps.
So welcome to Monkey Tennis Live with celebrity special guest Sue Cook. The first thing I need to let you know is that unfortunately Sue Cook has pulled out. But I do have this genuine letter. This is an actual letter from Sue Cook. Dear Adam, Tom and Nick, with regret, I'm writing to inform you that I must pull out of Monkey Tennis Live with special celebrity guest star Sue Cook due to filming commitments. I'm afraid that since the Tony Hares days at the BBC, my workload has increased significantly, and it leaves me unable to commit as much time to attend events like yours as I might like. I realise that this may leave you with a significant gap in the night's programme, and that the audience at the Leicester Square Theatre, she got that wrong, will be disappointed. So feel free to read this letter out to fill the gap. I wish you all the best with the event, and I certainly feel sadder about having to cancel on you than I did with the man that your event is celebrating. Best wishes, Sue Cook. P.S. I hear Bilotti is available. Unfortunately, it says that Bilotti is also not available, so you're stuck with
He's
us.
He's not here.
This evening, we will, of course, be discussing Alpha Papa in the first part, or as it's known in America, Alan Partridge, and continuing into the second part, ending with Cards Against Alanity. If you found an envelope on or near your seat tonight, then you are one of tonight's Cards Against Alanity contestants, and we'll be bringing down in the second half. One of you will win a On the Hour box set signed by Chris Morris himself.
Good interaction. Excellent.
If anybody wants to add any emotional heft to tonight's proceedings by proposing to a loved one, then let us know in the interval and we'll do our best to make it happen. I once considered proposing to my girlfriend at someone else's live event, but thankfully I came into some money and was able to do it properly. You can't mess around when it comes to your own wife.
Absolutely.
So this podcast will go live in two parts on Christmas Day and Boxing Day, which gives you the unique opportunity to record a message to your future self. So if you are about to give someone a regrettable present or you've got some Christmas Day advice, sir, then what would you tell yourself in a month's time?
I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Straight to the point.
We can all agree with
it. It seems fair. So let's get on to the film itself.
Yes.
Right.
So let's talk a bit about Alan and where he is at this point versus where we've seen him before. He's a milder Alan, isn't he?
Yeah,
I think
so.
He's a kinder Alan.
He's a younger Alan as well.
He is a younger Alan, yeah.
How's that happened?
They had to jettison the face makeup because it was too obvious it was makeup on a screen this big.
His six-figure income probably means he's hit the gym. Those years and pounds have fallen away.
They really have. He's got many more crow's feet in I'm Alan Partridge, that's for sure. Yeah. And where are we at in the timeline of Alan Partridge stuff here? So this is between Mid-Morning Matters and I'm Alan Partridge, is that right?
After I'm Alan Partridge.
Yeah.
After Mid-Morning Matters.
Yeah.
It's after Mid-Morning Matters.
Post-book?
Right.
Post-first book?
Mm.
Just sack book?
During book?
During book.
During book. During book. During in and around book.
I don't think we actually know is the bottom line, is it?
I think they're taking liberties with the Alan timeline, the Alan lexicon.
I know what the events of the film are discussed in the new book, Nomad.
Ah, so that's we have some insight on that later on, I believe.
Talk about that later,
ooh,
yes.
Yeah.
And he's mid-morning.
He is.
As we know, his slot has much improved. It's a promotion since the days of I'm Alan Partridge, obviously. And he's 55 at this point, putting the film 7 years after I'm Alan Partridge Series 2.
Done some maths there. It works. That's good.
Sometimes we get it right. Yeah.
But often not.
Pat Farrell, obviously. Now, weeknights, 10 to 12, the sleepy time slot. So that's the slot Alan had before, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they've done a straight swap. Yeah.
And so you've got one of the first shots here. You've got the camera panning across all the headshots of the DJs. My question to the group is, which DJ looks most like a pedo out of those headshots?
a strong opener.
Wow, that is weird. Yeah. Less than 5 minutes in and already the word pedo has been dropped. Brilliant. Okay. I'll help you out.
There's a clear answer. Yeah, yeah. Wally Banter from Wally Banter's Jukebox fame. It's definitely him.
He's got one of those knockabout children's presenter names that immediately arouses suspicion.
He's trouble.
Yeah, U-Tree is all over him, let's be honest.
Do we need to cut that, Jed? Okay, good.
It's fine.
And don't speak.
Jed, Jed's just used one word this evening already.
If any of you see Jed speak, you're allowed to go over and administer a savage beating. That's the terms of watching the equipment.
But not too savage, because he is recording this, so yeah, that's true. Gentle.
Anything from light petting to murder is fine. around this point, when we're scrolling down the DJ list, Pat's just looking at his own photo.
It's a bit odd, isn't
it? My question to you is, why? He works in that building. He goes past it every day. Presumably he's aware of what he looks like.
Do you think maybe he's just aware that something bad is coming and he's just reminiscing on the good old days?
Yeah, the shit's about to hit the Pat fan, isn't it?
So to speak.
Yeah. There's a phone number displayed in the studio. It doesn't work. I tried ringing it, obviously.
I think we all tried, didn't we?
And then we're kind of onto the phone-ins at this point, aren't we? He's got some classic phone-in chat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's just been on the phone to Norfolk's most suntanned child, which is obviously quite important.
Yep.
And
does
then
a child choose to be suntanned, or is that?
Well, that's why he's contacting the social services, I think. The first phone-in being the best monger, fish, iron, rumour, or war. So, which begs the question, which is the best monger? The worst monger.
The worst monger. Again, a pretty obvious answer here, I think.
I would go with war, I think.
War is the worst.
Unanimous decision there.
Seems fair. Yeah. I've known some nasty fishmongers, though, so it is a two-horse race.
Fair point. And then a large question.
Large question.
She prefers the word large to big, they said on the commentary.
Yes.
Large is a more Alan word.
It is, definitely.
And also, when discussing the large question, he makes the point that it's petrol, not gas, because, as we know, Alan hates American things.
Absolutely. We were talking earlier about Lynx, obviously, in the UK, but the American version of Lynx being
Axe.
Thanks.
Just a fact you can take home.
Yeah, there you go. Now you all know, in case you didn't.
Is it worth talking about at this point? There was an alternative intro that's kind of discussed on some of the commentary, because, as always, it opens in the radio station.
But always the same.
Always the same. But there was a discussion about it actually being set at the BBC and Alan getting an opportunity to go back to the BBC and pitch a show, which I kind of feel like would have been a slightly more interesting take on the show.
Yeah. But there was also a completely alternate version to the film, in that there was an Al-Qaeda plot that, you know, there was a terrorist plot that was actually binned off after what happened in 2007.
Yeah, I think the idea with that, there was
around 2005.
The idea with that plot was it was going to be a terrorist attack on the BBC. Alan was in a siege at the BBC.
And
so
for
I think
obvious
they kept
reasons, they had to bin that off.
Yeah, so I think they kept the siege element. Yeah. But took out the terrorists.
That fake, the introduction they didn't use as well about him going back to the BBC, would have been a good one, I think, because the idea was he went there under the premise of it being like a one-on-one meeting. And then when he gets there, he realises it's a pitching day full of younger producers. And so he's sort of outgunned, outnumbered, etc.
And I think that is a plot device they use in Nomad, isn't it?
Yeah. It's covered off where he goes, well, exactly as you've said, goes to the BBC under the hope of a one-on-one meeting. But actually the reality is he's with younger, better, fitter producers.
Do we need to talk about Jizlam?
Yes. We do need to talk about Jizlam, because obviously there's a bit in the studio where Psychic Simon has gone off under his own steam and started talking about the potential for Judaism and Islam to be combined as Jizlam, which Alan is horrified by and obviously is then motioning desperately for him to stop. So I wondered if you'd be able, obviously they're on the mid-morning slot, I wondered if you'd be able to get away with that. So I did what any sane, rational adult would do and wrote to Ofcom.
Obviously.
My email went like this. If a mid-morning radio show on a commercial UK station referred to the theoretical merging of Islam and Judaism as Jizlam during a light-hearted segment, and the same show featured the presenter reading out the question, "Is it true you're being taken over by a bunch of corporate hordes?" Do you believe a complaint about that programme would be likely to be upheld based on the use of those terms? And they replied, "We do not offer hypothetical views on the possibility of complaints being upheld." Which was a waste of fucking time. That bit rattles Alan so much that he then desperately trying to get back to his radio gold by saying things like, you can go around in circles looking for names for something, even a cat, which I think is a bit of a callback to when he's talking to Lynn in an earlier series. He's like, you couldn't present a cat. Cat's his default word, isn't it?
Yeah.
But surely kind of insulting religion is music to Alan's ears. I'm kind of surprised he's offended by it. You'd think he'd be like, you know, happy to join in, provide opinion, like commentary.
I think is that more when it's late night, he's fine, and when he's mid-morning, he's more worried about things.
And he's happy, but he's got a very strict code about which religions you can sock it to and in what level.
True. He is clear.
Christians all the time and Jews a little bit, to quote him directly.
Yeah, there you go. Should we move on to Alan's house?
We should, but I just want to mention that there are some dedications on his show for people wrongly turned down for planning permission. It may not seem important now, but I have a mind-blowing theory for the second half.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
He also asked what smell we'd all miss the most.
Oh, that's the large question, isn't it? Yeah.
Buttered crumpets and roast garlic. Move on.
Oh, coffee. Lovely coffee.
John Lewis?
I haven't even...
the
general smell of John Lewis.
Are you on commission?
Are you on an E?
No, it's just a lovely place to shop.
freshly baked bread is mine.
There you go. Nice.
Sure. So now we're in Alan's house. A different house to the one he was building.
He's had multiple houses as well because...
Six-figure income.
Yeah, but he's had the house that was built in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2.
Yeah.
Denton Abbey in... Scissored Isles, and this is also a different house. Yep. He's paying a fortune in stamp duty.
He's got a property portfolio.
He is a mogul at this point.
True. And we've discussed this before, but where is all this money coming from? Because he is on regional radio.
It's not from Skirmish, and I don't think it's from regional radio either, to
I
be honest.
Like Skirmish has been axed years ago.
Yeah. I don't think we're ever really going to get to the bottom of that.
We're never going
to
know.
He's debted up to the wazoo, isn't he?
Yeah, probably. He is. Yeah. It's up the wazoo.
Not just enough to buy all this business portfolio, but also to build a business centre shed in the garden.
Absolutely.
I had a question about this. As Lynn is finding him in the business centre, he's singing Coconut. What is that song?
No idea.
He's going,
no idea.
Coconut. Don't know what that is.
We're looking up at the
internet. No one's got any insight.
Tom was secretly hoping someone was going to leap to their feet then. Continue the song from where we left off.
We'll never know.
He's got, let's talk about the decor of his business centre as well. So there's a picture of a Spitfire on the wall, which is a nice throwback to I'm Alan Partridge Series 1, where he's trying to get people sacked, talking to Chris Feather at the BBC. Just give him a painting of a Spitfire and let him go, indicating that Alan has been let go.
He's been let go
at some point. Yep. And then there's also a photo of him at a Norwich City football ground, but it's... they talk about it a bit on the commentary. It's basically a photo of the crowd with Delia Smith in it. And then at the very bottom, you've got about this much of Alan's head. And he obviously thought that's a close enough brush with fame that it needs framing.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out who that was in the photo. So, yeah.
Oh, and it's also Delia Smith because she owns Norwich City.
Yes. Yeah, and also, you've got Alan himself on his own calendar in the business centre as well.
Of course.
Classic
and
Alan.
Quite a lot of the images in the background are blurred out as well. So what do we think that that's... What do you think they've done that they haven't been able to get clearance? Nick, I defer to you as someone who used to work in movies. You can tell me.
Let's say clearances. I don't
know.
He knows. He's not allowed to say.
Is it blurred out though, or is it a kind of artistic kind of light
that's
flare?
You can't really
in?
Tell, but I
didn't notice
really?
It. I wasn't prepared to watch the film twice.
You've not even watched it once, have you?
Well, skimmed over it.
Anyway,
he's heard about it.
Let's move on to the important point of Alan, as you can see here.
Boobs.
Caught. Red one-handed.
oh God!
By Lynn, his excuse that he's checking Osprey figures is so precise and said so quickly. It's like he knew he was going to get caught one day.
Yeah, he's practiced that the whole time. Yeah.
It also cuts from boobs in his glasses to a bum as he's checking Osprey figures. So
it
does. I like the fact that although he's been caught red-handed by Lynn, he doesn't stop, does he?
he's still looking.
He's prepared to spin those
scrolling
two plates,
through,
chatting to Lynn and still enjoying the porn. I also love that he, he's doing voiceover for Bevan's the Butchers, yesterday's meat at today's prices. That's not even a brag, is it?
No, but you do see him go, no, hang on a minute. I've got that wrong.
Maybe he's got it wrong. And also, he accepts the freedom of this. He accepts the freedom of the village of Hicklin, but only because he gets a big key. And Lynn knows, obviously Lynn and Alan, they're not level pegging, but they're on more of an even keel these days. She knows the only way to get him to accept that offer is by throwing in a big key.
Yeah. Yeah, and she knows how big the key's going to be and that's going to work for him, basically. Yeah.
Their relationship is much more cordial at this point. I feel like, has he mellowed slightly and she's gained confidence in the relationship? Because they've definitely moved on.
Yeah, probably.
It wouldn't be natural for her to be so subservient as we've seen her in the past after all these years.
Because I feel like in earlier days of Alan, he would have been annoyed that Lynn busted in on the business centre and caught him red-handed, whereas this time it's like, it's fine.
So what you're saying is she might be on as much as 10 grand a year now.
Yeah, she's had a pay rise, finally.
Fair enough.
And just before we we move on from this scene as well, I need to talk about Michael texting him that he hasn't bought toilet paper in 18 months.
At this point, I was really concerned when I first watched this that Michael wouldn't be in the film. And then
thought they'd just refer to him and he'd never appear?
Well, no, until this moment, I didn't know if they might just gloss over poor old Michael, but I was so pleased to hear that he's still stealing things from pubs.
But I thought what was great about this, why is he texting Alan that he's stealing toilet paper from a pub? Like, why do you need to share that information?
Yeah, is that like an excerpt from a text, or is that the sole contents of the message?
I just assumed he's bragging, basically,
maybe
showing off.
It's because Alan loves being thrifty, and so he thought he'd be proud.
So, question, what have you stolen from a pub?
Well, I can remember. I was probably drunk if I ever did, but I did have a friend who had who was challenged by another friend to see the biggest thing she could steal from a pub, and she got all the way up to a coal scuttle, which I thought was very good.
That's very impressive.
I mean, I think it was like it was a pregnancy cover. She sort of went, you know, oh no, I've got to go. My baby's clanking.
My baby is the shape of a coal scuttle. Yeah.
Oh no, I've got to go.
That's what you say when you leave the pub.
That's pub chat, isn't it? So we move on to the opening credits and more studio footage. One thing is that we're introduced to Danny Sinclair, who is a shit, isn't he?
I want to ask a question. Who is worse, Danny or Ben?
Oh, they're both dicks, aren't they? I hate Ben.
I've got a bit of time for Ben, just a bit, but...
I think the thing is, Ben kind of is a bit of a shit to Alan, but in a kind of practical joker sort of sense, whereas I think Danny Sinclair is just kind of, he just wants to get ahead in his career and just mocks Alan in quite a vicious way.
I think Ben is better.
Right, okay.
I just took one look at Danny Sinclair and thought sadness behind the eyes.
Yeah,
as well.
I think Danny's worse.
I was trying to work out how old Danny Sinclair's meant to be.
Very old.
I thought it was like a bit of a comic, because you do get regional radio presenters on in the morning who are basically like, hi guys, yeah, I just got in from the club, and they're all about 45. So I tried to look it up. He's played by Dustin Demery Burns of Cardinal Burns. So I went on IMDb and his age information is absent. I went on Wikipedia and there was no entry. I went to actorslikeme.com and under age it just said not enough data.
We are very thorough in our research.
I went to his own agent's website and even they'll only say 30s, so I mean,
yeah, that means he's 39 or 40.
It's anyone's guess.
Eternally
and
29.
In fact, speaking
on the
of age, of course, what happens in this scene as well is on the radio Danny Sinclair says that Alan's 60 and obviously Alan's only 55, so he's fuming about that.
What a shitbag. Alan's got a new car, that's important.
The Kia.
Yeah. Yep. There he is.
So, I mean, that's how Alan's saving money in other places, by basically having heavy branding on his car. So he's probably got that for free, hasn't he?
A few things about this. Ferndale's Motors is not real, sadly. There are several online guides to Partridge Motors, and he is referenced in a 2-star Telegraph review of this car. Also, I wondered, one advantage of having branding all the way down the side of the Kia is it means it's harder for vandals to get to it and write cock piss Partridge. So...
You could Tippex out some of the parts of letters, maybe. That might work. I haven't got time to work that out.
We can play with that in your own heads.
And so, obviously, you've got the infamous Rochford song cuddly toy in this scene. And I thought it was quite interesting. Danny Sinclair thinks he's cool, but then it's like, he's working on a radio station where they're playing Rochford on the breakfast show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a radio station playing music for old people, so he's actually not cool at all.
I don't think any young people genuinely listen to regional radio, do they?
Or any radio, possibly, but let's not get into that now.
Do you want some cuddly toy stats and facts?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So it was released in 1989, I think, and reached number 4.
Well, you're telling us the facts.
Yeah, I know. I've got the wrong notes in front of me. Always prepared. So reached number 4. It's got 2.9 million streams on Spotify, which equates to about 14 grand straight into Rochford's pocket. So he's doing all right from that. But it's quite a good song, I think.
1989. So you would have been
31?
Yeah. Very funny. Yeah.
Alan arrives. And Michael's there, immediately reprimanded for snotting at the radio station.
He's done that before, hasn't he? He's got previous.
100%.
Yeah,
he's
definitely
done it inside.
Yeah. I believe we've got visual.
There we go.
There he is.
There we go.
Yeah, because I think the first time I saw this film, I think I missed Michael's, like, because you just hear the receptionist inside saying, do it outside.
Yeah. So, questions about Michael's employment status. Was he fired from the petrol station? And has Alan demanded that he join him at the radio station?
It could have been any number of things that he's done. Hitting a customer, naked flames on the forecourt.
Stealing money from the till. Yeah. He's not allowed to handle money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I can give an insight into this from Nomad that Alan did help Michael get the job at the radio station.
He couldn't have got it on his own merits, could he?
No, not a chance.
No, probably not.
But do they really need a security guard? Security from what?
Well, Alan probably
have you watched the film?
No.
A man with a gun. A drunk racist ex-girlfriend.
All right, you had your fun.
And you've got another great example of, again, Danny trying to be cool, Alan not quite getting with it when Danny tries to fist bump him and Alan thinks he's trying to play rock, paper, scissors.
Yep.
Also, bit like, awkward.
Fist bump?
Well, because Danny thinks he's down with the kids.
I don't think the kids do that.
Well, exactly. That's the joke, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, dear.
He's getting it wrong.
There's going
like
to be
you.
A lot of that this evening. I wish there was more Michael and Lynn in this film, just
definitely.
Jumping into the whole thing.
Yeah.
One of the Gibbons brothers on the commentary says, some people would have liked to have seen a lot more of Michael. Yes, but you have to use him sparingly, to which I say, incorrect. No. Dave Clifton's on the scene now.
Yes.
Yep.
A lot of people argue that Dave should have been the antagonist of this film instead of Pat Farrell, which I've got a lot of time for.
Yeah, I always
theory.
Thought that would have worked better in this film, but...
And also would have led on from, you know, at the end of
I Partridge,
they have a big, like, there's a big chase sequence and they basically, the whole thing comes to a massive head.
Yeah.
So I think it would have made sense. It would have been good.
Yeah, I think it would have made much more sense, but
it is
what
quite
do we know?
It's quite nice to have him in this guise in that he has basically, he's fallen to his lowest ever.
Shall I read a quote from what Dave Clifton says in this scene?
Please do.
Dave Clifton says, I like waking up in the morning, breathing in the air and actually realising I've made it through the night and I haven't wet the bed.
We've all been there.
To continue, I am joking, obviously, but they were, of course, very, very dark days indeed, but they're all behind me now.
Yep.
They're not.
Are they really behind him, though?
No. But didn't you buy mattress protectors this week?
No, that was for you.
Oh, right. Did you? You went, didn't
That's because you're staying over tonight.
Oh, am I? I don't remember saying that.
Come on.
I didn't even script that.
It was my understanding no money would change hands.
Definitely not happening.
So is all of Dave Clifton's radio content about his own breakdown? Because certainly it is in this film.
Everything you see in this film is definitely...
Who is tuning in day after day to listen to an hour and a half of Dave Clifton talking about waking up with someone else's dirty pants on or like crying in a skip or like doing heroin?
Sounds quite good.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
It's a night out, that's for sure.
That's probably why they've been taken over, because someone needs to take control, because the station's falling into disrepair with these lousy presenters.
That's very true. So hang on. You're
wait a minute.
Wait, you're on shape side. You'd prefer shape the way you want it to be?
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh.
Corporate whore, Nick Alder.
So we've got a bit panto in here now. No, Nick, if you like it, that's fine.
Your silence is deafening.
I'm setting the scene. I'm explaining.
Sure. Mm. Angela, Alan's future love interest, comes in at this point. There's a bit of a chat where they refer to the West Wing while ripping off Walk and Talk from the West Wing.
Yep.
She's very plain, isn't she? Do we know what happened to Sonia, lovely Sonia?
They're just not a thing anymore.
No.
I don't know.
Oh, he's in the book, she's Alan's cleaner now, isn't she?
Oh,
he dumps
really?
Her. He dumps her, but re-employs her as a cleaner.
Incredible. I couldn't work out if she has a disability or not, because she's unlocking the disabled loo as we go by, but it's never really explored, is it?
I think she just likes the genuine comfort and space that comes with the disabled facilities.
Quite so do I.
We've all been there.
It's terrible, terrible. She's also reading a book called Who Moved My Cheese? I looked this up. It's a self-help book by Dr. Spencer Johnson, and on iTunes it has one review and it's one star. But at Monkey Tennis, we know one-star reviews are not to be trusted, even if you've got 14 of them.
Is it only 14?
So far.
It might be more after this. Anyway.
And yeah, Shape are obviously trying to take over North Digital. A lot of corporate jargon flowing around, exciting new phase, multi-platform content delivery, a lot of bad news hidden in there. I got an example of similar corporate jargon that irked me a lot. When Apple Music launched, there was a Q&A on their website and it said, does Apple Music work on Android phones? And then they put underneath, yes, we're excited to offer Apple Music for the Android platform. It's coming this autumn. Or, as I rephrased it, no.
It's coming, but it's not here yet.
Speaking of nonsense, this is Alan's saying that he's going to go and have a word with the board on Pat and everybody's behalf. And then Pat says, thank you, Alan, you're a pal. And then Alan replies, well, pals is pals. What?
What does it mean?
I wondered if he's genuinely flummoxed, because he's never been in a position where someone said, thanks, Alan, you're a friend before.
Yeah, it's a good
quite
point.
Possible.
Yeah. He doesn't know what's going on. So on to the boardroom.
The infamous boardroom.
Also, are there that many people that would sit on the board of a local radio station? I can't believe it. Seriously. No, I think we should spend some more time on this.
If everyone could just take a moment in silence to think about the boards of regional radio stations.
Thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just think about it.
Anyway, the station manager's a bit of a weasel, isn't he?
Alan comes in. Apparently, it's not a good time, but then... Is it Jason Cresswell or Jason Tresswell?
It's Tresswell, I think.
Then Tresswell says, no, now it is a good time. And then they say, okay, now is a good time. So in he comes.
And you've got the great slap around the face with the leather driving gloves.
Yeah. I mean,
good moment.
I guess Alan probably would do that. He's probably out of touch with how he'd behave in the boardroom. He's never really seen senior management, certainly not the BBC, and wouldn't know how to conduct
himself. I don't think he meant to slap him around the face, though. No. I think he meant to be close as a joke.
Was that the joke?
I think he meant to slap him in the face.
I thought it was just like an involuntary...
He
was.
Let's take this to the audience. For those of you that have seen Alpha Papa, if you think he meant to slap the guy in the face with the gloves, please make some noise now. If you think it was a tragic accident, make some noise now.
Wow.
We have our answer.
Accident it is.
There we go.
Can you come to all our recordings? We have a lot of arguments.
So, Alan debates whether, or well, kind of says, people say that feck off isn't as bad as fuck off. I believe, Adam, we have the answer to this, don't we?
We do, yes.
The definitive answer.
So,
I
went to the interwebs to get the definitive answer. There has been a ruling on this by the people that look after print advertising because Magnus used it in a print ad in 2008 and a complaint was overruled on the basis that it's a mild rebuff, not a swear word.
There you go. That is the answer.
So, use it around children, to the elderly, wherever it's you fine. Like.
Print advertising, it's fine. Yep. Thanks, Magnus.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
If Alan hadn't interfered in this scene, who would have been sacked, him or Pat?
Could it be both?
I reckon, yeah. I, mean, I reckon both, yeah, both would have gone.
I reckon get rid of both of them.
Yeah,
I think
still Pat, because he's knackered, isn't he? His show is not going to get any better.
How is Clifton not on the list?
Yeah, it's a good point.
How's Clifton got round?
The man
there?
Is openly talking about his drug abuse online.
Yeah.
And wetting the bed.
That is a massive plot hole.
I also noticed that Psychic Simon on the list is safe whatever happens. How does that work?
Well, Psychic Simon's good, though.
Yeah, but...
But he's the sidekick.
Well, yeah, I know, but they clearly have got big plans for him. They're going to promote him, maybe give him his own show. The point is, they're going to promote a sidekick and a bedwetter.
You don't know Clifton's going to get a promotion.
Yeah, to be fair. You've done quite well, to be fair, in business, Tom.
Very, very good.
So, Just Sack Pat is obviously one of the key bits of this scene. You can see it up there, and a couple of examples of it out and about in the public. I think these are taken from Glastonbury a few years ago.
Yeah, I think I've seen that at Glastonbury 2 years in a row, I think, that flag. And obviously it's made it onto telly as well.
And probably
I've seen it written on whiteboards in my office too. So it's really got out there.
Oh dear.
And from a character who has produced so many memes throughout the years, this is probably the only sort of meme-worthy quip quote that's come out of this film, really.
I mean... You get a few people doing a bit of I am Siege face, but it's not.
I think they tried to make that. So I think like their expectation is that was a killer line, or
that was like the marketing team's meme, and it just hasn't caught on.
I've got two very quick questions before we move on, because we must move on. He's still got his driving gloves on. He's been out of the car for about a quarter of an hour. What's that about? No idea.
Classic Alan.
He just loves
it. It's an example to do the gag, isn't it?
Yeah. Loves
it. And also, Just Sack Pat, why would he write it down and not say it?
I guess again, that's another massive plot hole.
It's for flourish, isn't it? I guess he's like three words, Just Sack Pat.
Yeah, and I do love the end of this scene when he's gone out and he's heavily breathing, going "Oh fuck!" and then just like drags his gloves out from behind the door.
They improvised that as well. They threw that in at the time. It wasn't planned.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. So Pat's on his way out. It looks like he's got a Kermit the Frog doll. It's in his box of stuff that he's leaving
with. We've got a screen grab of that up here.
Have we?
So his moving box. You see the green legs?
Yeah, look.
That looks like Kermit to me.
That's the sort of man we're dealing with. He must be in his late 50s at least.
Yeah, get rich.
Oh, easily.
Just really quickly as well, I think probably a few of you will be aware already, but Brendan Gleeson was apparently one of the people considered for that role to begin with, and he read the script and didn't like it, apparently, and then I read that they said they were make some changes, and they just didn't. So Colm was out. Matthew Kelly was also in the frame at one point, who's since been in a play with Simon Greenall that plays Michael.
What part was Matthew Kelly up for?
For
that part?
Yeah, yeah.
He was
in the Pat frame.
Has he done anything recently?
Yeah, he's in plays. He's done. He's bounced back.
Go he's on. In a play with Simon.
Go on.
He's in a play with Simon Greenall at the moment. Partridge alumni. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Do your research.
Fair enough. Right. has anyone else got anything about the scene where he's leaving? Obviously, he's taking a fake phone call from Jeff Susan.
That's
yeah, I love that bit. Who's Jeff? Jeff Susan.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you want to discuss, has anyone ever been caught out with fake phone calls like Alan is in this scene?
No, but the only thing I've done is when someone who, a manager or artist who wanted to come in and talk to me, I pretended to be on the phone so that they...
Same sort of thing, but so then the phone's never rung halfway through.
No.
Thank God. I mean, I've heard anecdotally about, got to be careful how I phrase this, certain senior people in the music industry walking around buildings that are known to have no mobile phone reception and pretending to take phone calls all the time. I'll leave it at that, but
brilliant.
Tom knows what I'm talking about.
Maybe we'll get drunk and tell you later.
Maybe.
We're back at Alan's house. Lynn's sitting on the toilet. Alan's trimming his nasal hair.
Yeah, which...
So their relationship has really developed, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Very close. Yeah, I mean, that's,
we are
you see
that
him trimming
going,
his
though.
Nasal hair in I'm Alan Partridge as well, don't you? So
yep.
It's consistent.
Keeping it trim. Would you go as far as to say that they're friends now?
I think
they are, loosely.
But I think for the purpose of the breakdown that happens later, I think they're purposefully, for the story, brought
they're
together.
A bit closer together. Yeah. And also, it's revealed later that he took her for a Christmas meal. That wouldn't have happened in the days of I'm Alan Partridge, would it?
That's a very good point. He wouldn't want to spend the money for a start.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So the Shape rebranding party, it looked to me like a launch that lots of people that rarely have occasion to dress up are basically forced to, didn't it?
Yeah.
Bad suits.
It's like their one night of the year where they actually go and get to have fun, but it doesn't look good.
No.
Just thinking about the start of this scene, the way this opens with you've got Alan makes a really rubbish joke about iPad, MyPad, like to Lynn, and she's just laughing, having a lovely time. And again, you would never would have seen him interact in such a kind of nice way. And I'm Alan Partridge.
He wouldn't have done a joke for her benefit before, would he?
No.
So he's talking to Angela again. She finally delivers a killer line when he's doing repurposing a poem. She goes, "And as if that wasn't bad enough, it ate my sock upon the moor," which I thought was pretty good. But then he obviously finds fault with it because accuracy over compliments equals Alan.
Classic Alan.
So he's like, "Why would a sock be on the moor?"
And he doesn't. The good thing is he doesn't like deliver that instantly. He does take time to think about it and just like,
mulling it over.
I will deliver that.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. Not good enough.
There's more of Dave Clifton's problems.
Yeah.
He has a chat with psychic Simon. I speed up some of the old stomach lining. I don't know if you've ever done any horse. And Simon trying to lighten the mood. I rode a donkey once. Feels like, no, I mean heroin.
Yeah.
He knows you do, Dave.
I feel like Clifton's issues or demons in the film are a lot darker than they were in a TV show. It's basically cocaine and hookers, which was not for the BBC.
No, he's talking about coke, hookers and heroin. So I guess those days were building in I'm Alan Partridge when he was just a good old-fashioned alcoholic living on Chinese food.
He progressed from there, yeah.
But it's got much worse. There's a brief discussion of Alan's old flame, the drunk racist. He'll tolerate one, but not both.
Which one would you tolerate?
Drunk over racist, sure.
Again, think about it.
Yeah, I should have.
Yeah.
We should script this.
Jed, we could probably edit that, right?
Yeah, sure.
No, sorry, Nick, Jed's saying he can't possibly edit. We'll have to keep it in.
Steve Coogan said in the commentary that he really didn't like this bit. He wasn't a fan of this character, didn't like this scene particularly, but he was a big fan of sort of Lynn like stepping up and dealing with it and being
dispatching
more
his ex.
Dispatching her, yeah, exactly.
Well, the whole thing's basically just a plot mechanic to get him out of the station
exactly,
when Pat
goes
to the gun,
and they recognise that as well.
I did think this this kind of former love interest, the drunk racist, she's basically Jill Mark II, I thought.
Yeah,
she's
a bit.
Kind of
looks
a bit similar, acts a bit similar.
Yeah.
Maybe that's Alan's type, that's what he goes for.
The actress who plays the drunk racist was also in The Lakes, one of my favourite programmes, as a lady who gets her husband's penis cut off. A televisual treat for
charming.
Everyone. Lovely. But in this, she disinfects skates for a living, and that's how they met. So Lynn removes the threat by putting her in a cab saying, God loves everyone, even sluts. But Pat is in with a shooter at this point.
I did think it's actually quite a sinister moment when you kind of see the gunshots happening behind him as well.
Yeah.
But Alan is pretty much oblivious to
it. He has no idea what's going on. I think he's too busy, because you kind of overhear the love interest character being bundled into the car, and the only bit of the line you hear is saying "Chinky when I'm pissed," so that gives you a level of, that's where she's at, so she's terrible. And of course
presumably she's gone back to charm school where she's
and there's the bit about when she says to Alan, "Oh, you weren't complaining the other night," and he said, "I couldn't speak." So I think
bloody hell
implication there's some, well, I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
Chocolate, we don't need chocolate everywhere. Mousse.
At least she can't be racist during. Pat shot at Alan as soon as he went in the radio station. Would he? That seems like...
Shot at him?
Yeah.
Pat goes through the window, doesn't he?
Maybe he couldn't tell it was
I think he's just shooting at anything.
I love the bit where Alan suddenly pumped up on adrenaline and goes, "You step to me!" Like that. briefly drunk on the joy of hitting someone in the face with a fire extinguisher, who turns out to be Simon. He then abandoned Simon immediately. Plumbed in the face with this fire extinguisher. Then goes to commandeer a vehicle, but is trying to explain the severity of the situation to the woman in the car, who's actually a man with a wig on. Has to get to the point where he describes Pat as Irish before she realizes it's a serious situation.
Irish! Yeah,
get in! As soon as he says that, he's off to literally go round the corner.
They literally drive round the corner, and as he's getting out of the car, the door slams. She goes, "Are you Alan Part?" And the door slams. So, question, is this the first time that, apart from Jed Maxwell, Alan has actually been recognised?
I think definitely in terms of what we've seen on screen, yes.
Yeah. It speaks to the high stakes of the situation that he doesn't stick around and then have a 5-minute
chat.
That could have been quite a good joke, actually.
To sign something.
So he's in the police station describing the charges: chronic thuggery, brandishment, harm, actual harm. correcting the policewoman's H's, as Nick did in the intro.
Yep.
Julia Davis was considered for a role as one of the policewomen, but apparently, I think according to an interview with Steve Coogan, she kept trying to introduce loads of extra character traits. I want this policewoman to be gay. I want her to have her own like subplot. And so she ended up not being in it, which is a shame.
Liberties.
But Sean Pertwee is introduced, and Jessica Knappett, who was my suggestion on a previous Monkey Tennis episode, for Partridge Reboot, if there ever was.
Alanis Partridge.
The young one, not the main. There's an excessive number of police people introduced at this point, isn't there? We have like 5 in 3 minutes.
Yeah, well, you know.
Good ratio.
It's a serious situation.
I'm not saying it's a bombshell. he's beaten into deference by Sean Pertwee's alpha male macho-ness.
He would end you.
I aim to please you and I hope to impress you. He's like, good man. Yes, you're a good man too.
He also really has to query like who's in charge, because obviously when the policewoman's there, he's just like, which one of you's in charge? Like, can it be you?
And he's like, it's very much this woman here.
He's on the road to political correctness, but he's not there, is he?
No, not quite. He's getting better, but he's not quite there.
Yep. We find out that he's still got aggressive athlete's foot, which I think is just important background info.
It's never going to go away, is it?
Little touch.
Yeah.
I like that.
We also know that he shot a cat, hasn't he?
It's implied. He says, I've only had one panic. He's like, why are you saying I've had panic attacks? I've had one panic attack. It was a perfect storm of no sleep, no wife, and angry brushes coming towards me. And he's like, I wouldn't use a gun to shoot, you know, I used a gun, but only to shoot, what was it? It's like cans or something. I wouldn't shoot it at a person or
a cat.
Once again, the cat comes to the fore. He shot a cat. A fantastic scene where he tries to make a speech and is constantly interrupted.
Yeah, I love that when he says, why have you got another siege to get to?
Yeah, a great line. And when he thinks he's genuinely not going to get to speak to his kids anymore, his final words, why don't you speak to me anymore? Which I was genuinely quite sad for him.
Yeah. Well, I think a few years back, he probably didn't care that they didn't speak to him anymore because he was busy with other things. But now it's like the reality's hit home that he's actually pretty lonely. Yeah.
In the twilight years, he's pining for Fernando and Denise, isn't he?
Yeah.
He couldn't think of a line. When he's offered a gun by the policeman, he says, he's like, do you want to hold my gun? He's like, does a... Yes, please.
That's great.
In fact, according to the commentary, that's just because the writers couldn't think of anything to say. So they thought, we'll just make it Alan that can't come up with anything, and that's fine.
It's pretty evident, isn't it? Especially if you listen to the commentary, that a lot of this was pretty much written on the fly. They were doing extensive rewrites. The whole kind of writing process was very frantic. And I think you can actually see a lot of that.
Coogan describes the whole process as a nightmare and is very critical about his own performance, saying he wasn't on this sort of top game, top form.
Yeah. A bit of a spoiler from the end, but on the commentary, the very last thing he says of the credits roll is, that was a film. High praise indeed.
It's a bit worrying, well, a bit concerning, really, to think it feels like the writing for this film was quite down to the wire, and anecdotally from commentaries and what have you from I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, the writing for that was right to the last minute as well. Just think they need to be a bit more organised.
Yeah, be better prepared. Under pressure.
Do your preparation, your research.
So Alan is sent into the siege, and there's a lot of politics and power struggles at this point between Alan, Jason, Pat, Simon, Danny, etc. One thing I noticed is that they've been careful to put a lot of less likable characters in the film than Alan, haven't they?
Yes.
I'm very much more on his side. Or even Pat. I mean, Pat's the villain of the piece, but I'm on his side more than I am Greg's, Danny's, Jason's, Dave.
Pat, is Pat really the villain of the piece? Isn't it Shape the villain of the piece, in a way?
I guess Shape turns out, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, because you have actually kind of a rare example of moral decency from Alan. When he goes into the siege, they're letting people out. So Greg is on his way out and he says, yeah, sleep well, Greg.
Yeah, Greg is a shit.
He's getting out.
Yeah, he's out of there. I like the bit, a bit later on, Jason calls Alan his left-hand man, and he's like, oh, you're my right-hand man. And then you watch him itch for a couple of minutes because he stood on the wrong side of Jason to be his left-hand man. He sort of can't handle it, and then he has to reposition himself. Danny's complaining because he gets punched, doesn't he? He's like, Danny's like, he hit me, and Alan's like, well, let's not get into who hit who or who, you know, may have deserved it.
I think he definitely had it coming.
Another thing to sort of make you feel a bit more fondly of Pat is that he admits he has a curry with Pat once a year. Doesn't like the man, really, but he doesn't have a starter either.
No.
But he does have a curry with him once a year. He's taking Lynn out for a Christmas
meal. Makes it as quick as possible.
He's sort of almost a changed man. It's part of the arc of the film, isn't it? He's quite sort of settled, content, a bit more friendly. But then he starts to see the potential to turn this siege to his advantage. And then
it doesn't take very much for him to revert to full asshole Alan mode.
Yeah. Also, the chap playing Jason, not to be mean, but it feels like he's in a slightly worse but more serious film than everyone else.
Oh, especially when he freaks out about that he's going to die.
Yeah.
It's a bit over the top, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you would be quite over the top if you're going to die. I don't know. I haven't been in that situation, but he does sort of chew the scenery a bit in this film.
He's all over the place. Oh, yeah. Pat at one point is saying in front of Psychic Simon, I've got balls coming out of my ass. Again, Simon itching to make a joke out of it, but very, very aware there's a gun strapped to his head.
And is it at this point, as I think we've got on the screen behind us? Yeah,
there he is.
Pat is dressed as a Mexican
Pat.
Yeah. Why is he dressed as a Mexican?
The best I could find from the commentary was that they said they used this as there's a few tools around this point to show that Pat is not evil. He's just unhinged. So he's putting a costume on. He does weird voices. It's not a premeditated plan. It's very unpredictable.
So he's just having a bit of fun. He's found a dressing up box in the studio. Happens to have a full Mexican outfit.
Just a bit of
very
fun.
Odd. Yeah. There's not many other instances of that, though. The rest of it is pretty much...
It's the only bit, isn't it, I think?
Yeah. So it's not consistent. It's just a one-off.
Again, do we think there might be a flaw in the writing because they were still writing the scene before they...
I'm not saying that. Why are you saying that?
Well, I'm just suggesting.
Very strange. There's a bit where Alan's having a conversation and he's talking about the use of safety words in sort of BDSM sex situations.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, people use a... People
actually, no, good question. No, Adam, what... BDSM.
Oh God, I can't remember what it stands for.
A likely story.
It's bondage, sadomasochism. Does anyone know what the D of BDSM is? Oh,
you filthy bastards!
Yes. Welcome to the Prince Charles Cinema. Filth.
In case the microphone didn't pick that up, basically everybody knew that word.
Our crowd. He's talking about using a safety word and he uses the examples airbag or crayfish. He's like, at least when someone puts on a mask, you can use a safe word like crayfish, which is very important because later on when he, instead of escaping, goes to sleep, he wakes up going, crayfish! So he's obviously been having sex dreams while held hostage.
And I think that also links back to the former racist lover who's dispatched when she's saying you couldn't speak. I think that's it's all linked.
Very true.
That's one bit of writing that did work.
There we go. So they're recording a new jingle, Pat's new jingle.
Yeah, and they say this is impossible. You can't do a top quality jingle in an hour.
Turns out though, Alan can't just play air bass as we saw in the Static Caravan. He knows the instrument for real, inside and out. And the guy held hostage used to be the drummer of Meridian. He's not the real drummer of Meridian, but Meridian did sign off on this after being sent some clips of the film. So it's Meridian approved.
There were quite a few stipulations as well. I think we went through, their website had to be on the credits.
They're the only people in the credits who've insisted on having their website.
And then
there's a frame at the end of the film about how many millions of records they've sold as well. I'm imagining that was a deal breaker.
I just think, is it good? Is it odd that that's there? I'm not sure how useful that kind of is in terms of the film or the story or the character.
What, Marillion's record sales?
No, that character that was in Marillion.
Well, yeah, it does feel like a bit of a throwaway gag.
Do I think?
Yeah.
Is it a gag? I didn't think it was that funny.
It's just a joke, mate.
All right.
Yeah. Chill out. It's fine.
So we're at Lynn's house. Lynn steps up. This is the scene where Lynn grasps the nettle.
Come on, Lynn.
She's got four locks on her door, I noticed. And
that was my question. How many locks? I lost count.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's four. She assumes that the police are there about Alan's crisp theft and has to explain. He just gets flustered at self-service checkouts. And then she discovers she's his next of kin, which she seems genuinely touched by.
Yeah, yeah. You can see her face changes when she realises that Alan's kind of...
And then she just goes... Take me to him. Which I absolutely love.
Yeah. And she's like, she said that, they're talking to her about Pat's, Pat being crazy, and she says, she made Pat three cakes in the last year, but there's nothing in them that would have led him to do this. Which led me to wonder if a murderer has ever been blamed on cake. So I looked it up.
Of course he did. Yep.
The answer is no, but in January, a teenage boy and his parents were found guilty of luring a married man to his death with the promise of birthday cake before stuffing his body in a TV box and dumping it in a car boot.
Lovely.
Yep.
Well, that's hilarious.
There you go.
Wait, did he get the cake or not?
This is crucial. It was not specified from my source, which is the Sun website. Is this Lynn's finest hour, do you think? She's got policemen getting her coffee. She's being interviewed on the news. She's named as Alan's next of kin. The siege is the best thing that's ever happened to Lynn, isn't it? Mm. Apart from maybe Gordon. Does she still live with Gordon, do we
that's
think?
That's a good question. Well, what happened to Gordon?
I can lead into that later on. There's some evidence later.
We'll come to that.
Love life.
But yeah, I just think the police offering to make her coffee is just a beautiful moment. There's a massive grin on her face.
Yeah, and isn't the first thing she says about Pat is that he's Irish?
To be sure.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Didn't script that. Yeah,
no, but it is in the film script.
Yeah.
It's the morning in the studio. This is the point where we see Alan doing a very brave breakout for about 10 minutes, only to discover that that he's actually dreaming and the whole thing's made up.
Did anyone spot that it was a dream?
I didn't. To be honest, I didn't think it was a dream. Even when he was the three policemen with the masks on saying, Jason Argonaut.
Yeah.
Until he took the mask off, I still thought it was happening. Although I did wonder how he knew where the secret room was that Sean Pertwee was like listening in.
Yeah, I think it definitely threw me when I first saw the film.
There he is, Jason
Argonaut. There he is. Just to get before that sequence happens, and you've got Alan looking through the photos, there's an old Radio Norwich photo of them in front of... Now, that guy in the middle, is that a young Dave Clifton? I'm not sure, but I thought it might be.
I think it's an 80s James McAvoy on the far right.
It looks like Danny Baker, doesn't it?
It's definitely not Danny Baker.
Oh.
I just put it to the audience. Is that Dave Clifton?
Just you.
Sounds like a no. Right. I guess a no. We'll move on.
The production on that picture as well is shoddy.
That is, it's not Photoshop gold, is it? It's Photoshop tin.
Yeah. Photoshop wood.
Later on the next bit where all the Allens are coming out, they've all got lipstick on. Which I didn't notice until it was in the commentary. Yeah, just another bit of dream sequence magic for you there. Yeah.
This is a callback as well to Day of the Jackal, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of classic film references.
Anyone seen Day of the Jackal?
No.
Nope.
Jed
has.
You're not allowed to speak.
But Jed has seen it.
Well, it's a callback to Day of the Jackal, which obviously is a callback to previous references of that film in I'm Alan Partridge.
Someone's done some research finally.
Oh. Not enough to watch Day of the Jackal, though. I should
good, that's fine.
That clear.
Or to watch Alpha Papa, probably.
Alan mistakes Pat's wife Molly for a man, and when grasping for a compliment, only manages, she's got such brown hair. there's a line here that Cole Meany tried to get rid of, the bit where he's talking about, oh yeah, my Molly's with the Angels now, the Angels took her, and then Psychic Simon says there must have been a few of them.
Yeah.
Meany tried to, I think Steve Coogan's talked about this in a few interviews where he tried to nix the line asking saying that Pat Farrell wouldn't say that, it's too kind of fanciful, he wouldn't have said it, and Steve had to insist it stays in because it's a comedy film and it's a funny line.
So I think that's fair enough. It is a good line. Yep.
It's a joke they've made before as well, because they suggest that obviously Lynn would need several men to lift her up
for the baptism.
Which I don't think is actually true, because I think with a good fireman's lift you could easily get Lynn onto a font.
Just dunk her in.
Yeah.
Go on, Lynn lass.
Go on.
Yeah. Lifted, maybe not, but tipped, definitely.
Yeah. That'll work.
Angled.
Okay. Alan tells a story of his kids calling him over on a beach holiday and all they'd done was dug a big hole. Miserable.
So good.
Yeah. I feel like this is the point where people are starting to side with Pat a little bit. The viewing public as well.
You're not really on Jason. Is it Tresswell or Cresswell?
It's Tresswell.
Right. You're not really on Jason Tresswell's side. So,
well, you were earlier. You're a big fan of Shane, aren't you?
Yeah. He's flip-flopping.
It's the way you want it to be, pal.
Yeah.
He's done a 180.
Yeah, okay, no. He's not that bad, I guess. He's got
okay, we're back in the studios. Dave Clifton's got more chat for us. I came to in a skip in the middle of the afternoon with my underpants in my mouth. Calling them underpants is the most tragic part of that sentence. And then he goes, oh, these are not my pants.
We've actually, but Dave. Before you're back in the studio, though, you've got the police operations room, which is a great scene. So you've got this board with all the kind of main players of the siege up with pictures and their ages. So on that board, it lists Danny Sinclair is 34, although I think we're all agreeing that's
bollocks.
Not right. Jason Cresswell, 43. Simon Denton, 33. Danny Sinclair, 34. Pat Farrell, 59. Oh. And so obviously the gag they're making in the film is there's a random photo of Pat Farrell on the board there. And the police officer says, oh, I just Googled Pat Farrell. If you actually Google Pat Farrell, this is the person that you get. Again, I mean, that is not the Pat Farrell from the film either. So there you go. Would you like some small facts about Banged Up Abroad?
I would love some because I have not seen Banged Up Abroad. What's Banged Up Abroad? I haven't seen Banged Up Abroad.
Stop saying Banged Up Abroad. Well, I've never seen Banged Up Abroad either, actually, but I can tell you this much, because this is as far as I can be bothered to read on Wikipedia, basically. It airs on Channel 5. It's been running since 2006.
So it's still currently running?
Yeah, currently in its 10th series. That's it. That's all I can be bothered to read.
Brilliant.
And I did like the bit just after this. The WPC refers to Simon Denton as Sidekick Simon in the transcript.
Nice.
So it was just a nice little in-gag.
Yeah. Right, we must move along. We're in the studios. We've talked about Dave and his underpants. Sad. There's another sad scene from Dave. Alan is starting to love the siege. I'm starting to think he'd prefer if it never ended. He's having a great time. I also think this is the point where it's the most people that have ever taken Alan seriously at once. Like, he's actually got a role to play. I like that to Angela, his love interest, says, I'll protect you, and then immediately proceeds to use her as a human shield.
Yep. Classic Alan.
And then we find Michael, who's been hiding in a cupboard, unaware that there's even a siege. some facts about Michael's cupboard endeavour. He's been there for 16 hours. He said he found a place of concealment, like in army manoeuvres. There is a theory going around that Michael was never actually in the army, and I think this is fuel for that fire that he thinks hiding in a cupboard is.
Because this should be like music to his ears, surely, the opportunity to show off his army skills, but instead he thinks
he might be a bit rusty.
Better get in the cupboard.
Do a poo.
Just do a big poo.
Well, yeah, speaking of poo, he's Michael's pooed in a lunchbox. Let's get that out of the way.
He's let himself down.
So I noticed so far every scene in the film where Michael has appeared or been mentioned has had some reference to shit in it.
Or some kind of bodily function.
Just the kind of guy he is.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's also revealed that he shares a bed with his brother. The slow reveal of these details is very, very enjoyable. Yeah. Quick question to the team. Have you ever slept in a cupboard?
No.
No.
Okay.
Hang on. Have you?
I slept in a cupboard once.
Once is enough. Once That's is all enough. We need.
It was a house party in Cardiff and I was very low on options of places to go.
You slept in a cupboard?
Upright. And I thought, what better place to chat to you about it than in a room full of people I don't know?
Wait, was there literally nowhere
what
else
about
you
a
could
floor?
Sleep?
Was floor? There literally no floor space?
Cushions?
Yeah, but the cupboard was protected.
From what?
From what sort of party was this?
It was a sort of party
where... Oh, I know, this is that
BDSM thing.
Yeah, right. We've got
it was a very restricted cupboard.
What spare dignity?
I feel there's one question which we need to ask.
Well, yes, we're gonna have a short interval in a second of 10 minutes or so and then come back and talk about the rest of this film and play Cards Against the Lanity. But before we go, I feel like, question for the group. Michael at this point says, I'm really sorry I done a shit in a box.
Love that line.
Have you ever done a shit in a box?
No, I can't say I have. Nick?
Not in a box, no. I was once in a...
Well, that's a very leading answer.
You're going to have to expand now, sadly.
No. I was once in a field, but it's probably not worth talking about. Have you done a shit in a box?
No, but I've also been in a field and caught short, but never done a shit in a box.
Okay.
Well, do we put this open to the audience, or do we not want to know?
If anyone wants to talk about their experience of shitting in a box, find us in the interval.
Or don't.
We'll get you up for an extensive chat afterwards. But we're going to have a short break now. Thank you very much, and we'll see you in about 10 minutes or so.
Thank you.
Just like that. Monkey tennis?
People around the world ask, who is Alan Partridge?
Monkey tennis?
I am Seatress.
Chronic thuggery?
Monkey tennis?
Jason Argonaut.
Monkey tennis?
Our friend Michael's just sent a text saying he hasn't bought toilet paper in 18 months.
How does he?
He steals it from a pub. What's the relief?
Monkey tennis?
Yeah.
And as we send our audience out into the foyer for a drink or a sit-down wee, that marks the end of part one of our Alpha Papa special, recorded live at the Prince Charles Cinema in London on November 24th of this year. You can get part two as long as it's after Boxing Day 2016. Both parts will already be available. If you're listening on Christmas Day, thank you for your loyalty, and you'll be able to listen to part two at midnight tonight when it goes live. All that's left really is to say thanks for listening, and join us for part two as the siege takes to the road.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.